Hey friend, Graham Baldwin here with the Speaker Lab. Hey, wouldn't it be nice if someone gave you the exact process to find and book more speaking gigs in 2024? That'd be nice, right? Well, I'll tell you what, we're just going to do that for you. We've created a new 18-page guide based on Dan Irvin's process that helped him actually book over $100,000 in speaking gigs in the past year. Now, Dan is one of our team members here. He's a very successful speaker and also one of our coaches. And so you're going to learn how to get started prospecting, master discovery calls, proposal emails, and so much more. All you got to do is go to thespeakerlab.com/steps. Again, that's plural. thespeakerlab.com/steps. We're going to send you that PDF guide right to your inbox. Again, that is thespeakerlab.com/steps. That's it. That's all you got to do. Go there. Hey, thanks for listening. We appreciate it. You're awesome.
Yeah, don't just sell a talk. Like that's the big, and that's what we teach, right? Don't, hey, I'm a speaker or I have a really cool keynote. One, you got to sell the outcome, but two, you kind of have to create an experience.
Hey, friends. What's up? Graham Baldwin here. Welcome back to the Speaker Lab podcast. Thanks for coming back for another great episode. Really glad you're here. Hey, this week we've got a speaker, author, and also one of our facilitators here at the Speaker Lab, Mr. Jake Thompson, is back to talk about the process of how he scaled his speaking business and also his speaking income. First of all, for context, if you haven't checked out Jake's other episodes, episode 205 and 412, again, 205, 412, now would be a good time to do so that you really have, again, kind of the full context backstory of Jake's journey before you listen to this episode. Now, in this conversation, Jake and I are going to get into how he's been scaling his speaking fee and staying focused on continuing his growth as a speaker. So if you are ready to level up your business, this episode is for you. So let's get to it. Here's my conversation with Jake Thompson. Enjoy. Hey, what's up, friends? Graham Baldwin here. Welcome back to the Speaker Lab podcast. Good to have you here with us today. Super excited for today's conversation. We're going to be chatting with a good friend of the program, Mr. Jake Thompson. Now, we've had Jake on multiple episodes before. He's been on episode 205 and also 412. Yes, that's right. We're coming up on 500 episodes here, which is ridiculous. Jake's been a part of a few of these. And then behind the scenes, Jake's had a big role within the Speaker Lab. He and I met, I don't know, what was it? 10, 12 years ago or something.
It's 2012, bro.
And then he went through our Speaker Lab Elite program 2018 or so, and is now just killing it in the business, so much so that we actually forced him to come back in and help so many of our students. And so he works behind the scenes as a facilitator in several of our programs, just kind of helping guide students and support them in their business. So that's a long, illustrious intro there. But Jake, welcome back to the program. How are you, man?
Excited to be here, man. Third time. This is the charm. Let's go.
This is it. You are in rare air, my friend. And so good to have you here. All right. So again, if people want to find out more about kind of like your background, some more details and context on you, definitely go back, check out those episodes. Again, that's 205 and 412. But what we're going to be talking about today is you've had tremendous growth in your speaking business in the past couple of years. And one of the things we want to talk about is for so many speakers who are, they're getting going, they're starting to build some momentum, things are happening for them. And then they're just trying to figure out like, yeah, how do I go to that next level? You know? And I know this is something that you've, one of the things that you actually speak about, but it's also something that you've kind of navigated in your own speaking business. And so let's start with this. Like when speakers talk about, and this isn't exclusive to just speakers, this is just kind of entrepreneurs in general. When we talk about like, I want to go to that next level, like that's kind of this nebulous thing. So how do you kind of think about that in your own journey or business? Or like maybe walk us through like, what have the last couple of years been like for you in terms of thinking about, I want to go to that next level in my own speaking business? How has that been for you?
Yeah. So, you know, honestly, it's internally, it's a struggle for a lot of us because the next level, we get really excited about it, but the next level is a lot of new and unknown. And so you kind of start back over, like you deal with the same discomfort in your stomach. You deal with the same of like, can I play at this level or not? Like you deal with everything you dealt with day zero. And so for me in the speaking business, when I keep thinking next level, it's because I'm looking at a few people in this space and I may not know the back end of the business. That's kind of the problem you run into of seeing quote unquote other speakers, but I've seen them perform and I see the clients they work with and think that's the quality of experience I want to create. That's the level of clients I want to work with. That's that next tier. And then there's the guys that are maybe one tier above that. And so I really look at the people in terms of where are they speaking, who are they working with, and then what are they doing? Like, how good of a work and job are they doing is where I look at tiers. And so for me, it's been picking out little targets ahead of me. As we've talked about a few times, like your buddy John Acuff is like one of my kind of quote unquote North Stars. Because of the quality John does, the amount of content and books he puts out, like he's up there for me as like somebody I'm wanting to get at that level, not only from a fee standpoint, but just level of impact. Alan Stein Jr., who I know has been on the podcast, mutual friend as well. Alan's like a step ahead of me in terms of where his fee is. And we play in similar spaces. So I can look at those guys and say, okay, what are they doing that's maybe a level higher than I am that I need to rise up to? So for me, it's been just each year, how do I go up a level in terms of the quality of content I deliver, the products, so like books, my second book came out this year, and some other deliverables kind of on the back end. And then commanding that higher fee also means working with different clients. But the thing I'll caveat with that is you have to be willing to say almost goodbye to the old level to go to the new one. Because as a speaker, when you get into the $15,000 and $20,000 range, the clients you worked with at $5,000, $7,500 are suddenly not able to afford you. And you have to say goodbye to some groups that may want to rebook you as you go up to that next level because you have to have that fee integrity. So it's a constant internal struggle. And as I laughed yesterday with someone else around this, it's a constant pursuit of how do I stay grateful for the gigs and the opportunities, the things I prayed about and worked hard for 2018 when I was just starting into this business that I now have while continuing to stay hungry of like, that's the next level I want to get to. And for me, it's that constant focus of how can I just impact more people versus how can I make more money, be more popular, any of that? Like, how can I get in front of to help more people do what they need to do better? And so that's where really a lot of that struggle is from the continual growth side.
So it sounds like part of it is just kind of like looking around at other people who are doing something similar to what you want to do, who may again be a step or two ahead of you. But also I think that's important to note is like doing it in a way that you want to do it. You know, who are the people that like are great on stage, great in terms of the business, but you kind of get a better sense of kind of who they are. And you're like, they're just a quality human being, you know, and this is kind of a person that I resonate with, the kind of person that I want to grow up and be like. You know, I mean, this is something I do a lot within the Speaker Lab is like, who are entrepreneurs, business owners, people in our space, people outside of our space, who again, who are step or two or perhaps light years ahead that we can learn from and kind of pick up some things from. So when you're doing that though, how do you kind of balance the, I want to find people who are steps ahead that feels like relatable and it feels like achievable, but it also doesn't feel like this unattainable thing that they are so far ahead or that they've accomplished so much more, where it almost starts to become like defeating or deflating and it's discouraging. So how do you kind of balance that of finding the right people that are a step or two ahead of you?
It's the biggest struggle in the game, I think, honestly, because the people you tend to look at and be like, man, that person's doing it well, I want to do it like that, tend to be further along, much more polished, they're further along, and you don't see the steps in between. It's like John, right? Like the one thing I appreciate about John is he always shares that picture like every year of him sitting alone in a room where nobody came to his picture event.
Yeah,
but there's also not a whole lot between that and what you see currently online. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Like you just have to go way back into the archives to find it. So tell a lot of people, like, go way back. Like if you go on our YouTube channel or my old, like go way back into my content and look at some of those old videos and be like, oh, like go back to episode 5 of the podcast. It sounds terrible to wear like you 500. Like it's just a different ballgame. So that's part of it. The other piece is just building relationships in the space and having a real abundant mindset. And that goes against a lot of our natural programming, especially as a speaker, because we're like, I want gigs. I got to fight for gigs. I'm up against all these people for gigs. And I was that way early on. Like you fight against it, but you're like, I'm trying to build a business. Like I want to beat you. And obviously I'm a competitive guy. But where I really shifted over the last couple of years is how can I just give away the information? Like how can I find the speakers who are hungry, want to do it? Because one, I know this, just because I tell you, like, here's what I did, here's things, here's information, doesn't mean you're going to do it. 99% of the people aren't going to do the work. The second piece is the more you're willing to just open and talk shop, the more you start to connect with other people who are, that are around that same sphere sometimes with you. And so you build relationships with them. And like a lot of relationships, they have seasons. The people I started in this industry with, that we went through trainings together, we started, you know, kind of around the same time. Some of them didn't really pursue their career. Some of them never really got it going. Some of them did something else. And so those relationships I still have and support, but I also don't invest tons of time masterminding or spending time with them. I build relationships with others. And so that's a really key piece of it, of finding other speakers, building relationships, and the ones that are on the same journey with you, keep pouring into each other, because you're going to be able to talk about a lot. Be willing to open up and share with kind of the people behind you a little bit. And when you do that, you tend to attract the people ahead of you that have that same mentality. And for me, that was some of the folks here at NSA North Texas that have been doing this decades longer than I have, and they have really strong, sustainable businesses. I was kind of the, hey, you're kind of the new guy. We don't really know you, until they got to see one of the events we did and saw me speak and thought, oh, you're taking this seriously. You mm-hmm. want to be really good at this craft. How can we help support you? And so there are people like that out there. And so you just have to find them. It's kind of like, you know, one of our guys, Reggie, right there at TSL. Like, we were sitting at Speaker Lab and or at the team retreat, and he's just asking questions. I was like, here, let me send you this. Here's what I send. Here's this. Here's, like, I'll give you all of it. And he was kind of like, wow. And I was like, dude, like, I know where you are. I know where you want to go. I know your heart. Like, you want to be good. Here, take it. Like, go. Like, I want to see good people, because I think there's also a lot of people in our industry that are very inauthentic and are all about promoting their ego and themselves. And yeah. for me, as someone who really cares about helping others, I want to find as many people as possible who want to do the same and just say, how can I learn from you and how can I help you? You may be 5 years ahead of me, but maybe I've got something figured out because we did merch. And so let me tell you what we did and how it could help you. So that's really how I tend to approach it, is don't get caught up in what you see right now on social. Find people and just become someone who's like, how can I add value to you? How can I add value to you? And then go from there, building those relationships.
One of the other things that's, I think, important to note in that is that I found, you kind of alluded to this as well, is like, most speakers are really generous and helpful and kind. One of the interesting things about speaking is, like, you know, at the end of the day, everyone is competitors, but it's not like one person can dominate the market and do, if I do all these gigs, that means there's no gigs for you. Like, the reality is like, there's no speaker that can do every single gig, you know? So it's not like a zero sum game where in order for me to win, you have to lose. Like, we can both win and we can both do gigs. In addition, you know, one of the things that I know we've both seen, and so many speakers have seen, is that one of the best ways to build your speaking business is building those other relationships. Because if you go do a gig this year and you crush it, they're probably not going to have you back for a couple of years, but you want to maintain that relationship. So being able to say, hey, let me tell you about my friend Grant, or let me tell you about Reggie, or let me tell you about whoever who would be a good fit, it continues to provide value for that client, but also can continue to nurture and build the relationships with other speakers, because I'm going to turn around and scratch your back too. So it's really, really important to do that. So in terms of, like, building those relationships with other speakers, like you mentioned, when you're kind of getting started, you're not really bringing anything of value or substance to the table. And you kind of alluded to there's speakers that you look at now that you've been able to build relationships with, and others that may not have had that opportunity yet. So what is it that things that you can do to maybe start to get on other speakers' radars where they can start to take you seriously?
Yeah. So the one thing that I love doing, so I'm involved with NSA, National Speaker Association. And I even tell kind of our students at TSL in the accelerator program this, like, get to know other speakers at your same tier. Like, when you go through our accelerator and you're in those cohorts, like, build relationships with each other, even if you're like, well, we don't talk on the same thing, because you never know where that may come from. The second thing is, like, go, like, find them. Like, hey, you see somebody speak at an event, just grab them afterwards if you have the opportunity and say, hey, I learned this and this. Like, when you were starting, what's one thing you did? And then go do the thing that they tell you to do. That is the huge separator I see from a lot of people. And I've talked to students in our cohort about this, and people I've met at NSA of, like, hey, how do you do that? How'd you get there? And I'm like, hey, listen, read Grant's book, do this, do this. When you finish those, come back to me with any questions. That eliminates most people, because most people want to be a speaker, but they're not willing to do the work side. Mm-hmm. And so if you're someone who will not only ask the question, but follow up, do the work, and then follow up again, you really send the signal of like, hey, I want to be good at this. I'm willing to do the work versus I just want to be the person on stage delivering. And that's a key piece. I always tell people, like, find the speakers you're in love with, or like you feel like those could be North Stars. Find ways to add value, connect on social, like comment on things, ask questions, but then do the thing they tell you to do and then ask a follow-up question. And I think that's really, really important, because if you send this signal, I've heard you, I've done it, here's what else what I want to know, then someone that's above you is really willing to put in the time, because they don't want to waste their time investing in somebody who just wants the time and the attention versus, hey, I actually want to get good at this.
Yeah, I would 1,000% echo that. And I think a key there that you kind of touched on is whenever someone gives you some piece of advice is to go do it, but then is in the follow-up of coming back to them, you know, a few days, weeks, months, whatever it is later, and saying, hey, you know, remember that thing you told me to do? I did it. Here's the results. What's step two? You know, because ultimately, I think at the end of the day, again, most people want to help other people, but we want to help other people who are going to do something with it. You know, just spouting off some information that then like nobody's going to do anything with is like, it just feels like a waste of time. And it's what tends to happen, unfortunately, is then some speakers or just people in general kind of become a little jaded or just guarded of just like, I don't want to waste my time telling you, because historically most people aren't going to do anything with it anyway. But if you prove yourself to be someone who will implement, apply, do something with it, more than likely than not, the speaker or whoever it is you're talking to says, yeah, I want to help this person. Like, this is, you're going to do something with it? By all means, like, let me help you. Now, when we talk about like going to that next level, that again, that can look a lot of different ways to a lot of different people. One of the factors you touched on there was fees. And so kind of talk through like, what's been your thought process or evolution in fees, how you think about fees, when do you raise fees? It's much easier to raise fees than to lower fees. How do you manage fee integrity? A lot of things that go into fees. I want to, you know, when you're starting off and you are, again, let's say a $3,000 to $5,000 speaker, and you're like, okay, then there's these different tiers and I want to get to a $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 level, but that's not just like an overnight leap. So kind of talk us through what's been your thought process when it comes to fees and raising your fees.
Yeah. So that's the question we get asked most often. And my comment back is always, it depends, right? Like you have to be really good on stage of delivering value. You have to be really good to work with. You have to have some kind of experience, expertise that people want to rebook you. So for me, I set the fee at $5,000 simply because one of our mutual friends, Michael Port, was like, if you're going corporate, like that is a kind of minimum standard. Now, I was taking gigs that were $3,500, but I was negotiating kind of the deliverables, right? It wasn't just, hey, the fee for me to give a talk is $5,000, and they come back and say, oh, well, we have $3,500. Done. I'll do it. Like, there has to be, I'm pulling stuff out of the program. We're changing some things around. So I was $5,000 for a little while, and I started inching up the more I was getting booked. Now, the problem that I ran into is that about my, let's see, I went through TSL, 2018 summer, late spring, early summer, most of 2018 events were already booked up. I got a few small local free events that year. 2019 was kind of my quote unquote first full-time year booking event. So I'm doing, $5,000 events for a lot of them, some lower paying ones. But then by January of 2020, I doubled it. Like, I was over $100,000 worth of business. I had a lot of $5,000 to $6,000 events, and then COVID hits. And everybody goes virtual. Well, most people, everybody's like, I don't know what the cost is. And so kind of across the board, a lot of people are like, well, it's just 50%. It was a terrible idea as an industry to say, hey, it's 50%, because really it's still the same amount of work, if not some. The only thing is I just don't get on a plane and go see you in person. Yeah. So I was doing a lot of events that year at discounted rates because of the virtual aspect. So 2021, I start climbing it back up again. I'm doing 5,000, 7,500, and I start getting some larger brand name clients. I started having the opportunity to work with groups like Titleist Golf and Diamonds Direct and things like that. And so once I was doing those, even though it was some of them were virtual settings, it started to say, hey, if I'm working with big name brands like that and they're hiring me back, not only once, but they're bringing me back, that's a sign that I'm delivering value. And if I'm delivering value, I need to make sure I increase my fee. And so I started inching up. I would get up into the $7,500 to $10,000 range and was really kind of at that 75 to 10, thinking that I don't know what I need to do to get to 15 to 20. And worked with a mutual friend of ours, Carrie Wilkerson, who was my coach for a couple of years, around some of this. And she was pushing me pretty hard of like, what's the package you're giving him? How's the program? And it really wasn't until a client literally become one of my better clients. Client was like, I charged him, I think $7,500 all in. And mainly it was because I was like, they're a really small company. Like they're 50 people or so. And I don't want to 10K overprice myself, get out. And he literally stops me and says, done. But if it goes well and we do anything else and you ever charge me less than 12, he was like, I'm going to be disappointed in you.
Mm.
And I said, oh, okay. And like, he hadn't even seen me speak yet. Wow. And so when I finished speaking, he was like, I stand by what I say. And so that was a signal of like, I'm delivering more value than I'm anticipating. And so that year I start pricing more. I start working with some global clients. And they were like, hey, we have a big event in Vegas. So that says to me, it's an international company. Your event is in Vegas. You're a specific industry in sales. So you have budget. It's 15. And they're like, what if you do the same program on two back-to-back days? I said, cool. If I'm doing two and it's one trip, I'll fly in the day before. I'm there for essentially two nights, fly out. It'd be 20 plus hotel and stuff. And they were like, done. And I was like, oh. So once they said that, I was like, okay, my new fee is 15. That is my number for my corporate audiences and even associations because they were willing to. Now, I've shot at 17 and 20 before, but the only time I'm going to shoot higher is when I'm booked. So January of this year, I had 8 events. Like putting another 1 to 2 on the schedule just seemed like to me. And so when I had a few leads come in, I said, hey, if you're committed to January, here's the number. I didn't get them. And I know the person they got and I know the fee that they ended up paying for it, but I was willing to ask for more because it was a surge pricing for me. Like yeah. I just knew that's my schedule. Whereas a nonprofit comes to me and I have a sweet spot for nonprofits that work with four-legged creatures because of my 3 down here on the ground, mm-hmm. Or the education space because my mom and grandmother were teachers, then I'm willing to have a rate for those audiences. Yeah. Because I know nonprofits are not the same as corporate and association. And I know those. And so 5 times a year, I'll take a lower fee for a nonprofit or education space. And so I set that aside and say, this is a low fee intentionally because I want to support you. And so I'm giving you that extra value. So with fee, like everybody asks, and so what I usually tell them is, what are the level of clients hiring you? Like there's a difference between a local State Farm office and a regional State Farm team and the national organization, right? Mm-hmm. There's a huge difference in budget and name, even though it is kind of under the same umbrella. So what are the level of clients? And then how often are you getting repeat business? Mm. Like that is the big one for me that says, hey, you're really delivering on this because the people that hire you want to bring you back, want to get you in front of other people or opening doors. And then the last one is, if you're always getting a yes, you might be a little low. Like it's scary, but it's not a bad thing to have my inbound rate right now, I have a 60%, 65% close rate. So 35 to 40% of the time, I'm not getting the gig that comes to me, like literally the warm lead in my basket, but I'm okay with that because if I was at 100, I'm probably too low. Like that was a ton of information around about because it really is that it depends totally. Answer. And that's a tough deal. And so I tell people like, if you have a full calendar this month, shoot your shot, like take a shot at a higher fee, but don't just automatically discount your fee if somebody's like, oh, our budget's lower.
Agreed. Totally agree there. So there's kind of like a couple of factors. I mean, there's a ton of factors at play here. You know, one of them on one end of the spectrum is going to be just like true laws of supply and demand. You know, if you are going like, I'm a brand new speaker, nobody cares about me, I've got endless supply and no demand, like there's just only so much you can charge there, right? Yep. And over time, if you become this, you know, very in demand speaker, then you can obviously command more higher rates there. You mentioned also there is the industry that you're in. You know, there's going to be certain fee ranges that they're used to in some industries more than others. You know, you mentioned like if you're charging anything less than $5,000 in corporate, they may not take you seriously. If you're charging much more than $5,000 in, let's say, education, it's hard for them to even maybe have the budget for that, you know? So a lot of it depends on that. But the other side of it is just the mental side of it. You know, like there's the, wow, am I you know, I was a $5,000 speaker and then I was a $7,500, but I don't know if I'm a $10,000 speaker or a $12,500 or $15,000 or a $20,000 speaker. Like, I look at other speakers and I'm like, I don't know if I'm there. So can you talk us through the mental gymnastics that went into that, just kind of the confidence, because there's also the people that would just say like, well, just name your price, you know, name it, claim it, and you're worth it, and just pick whatever you should, you know, double your price. And like, that's baloney. Like, don't do that. Like, there is like a method to the madness here, but there's also, again, just like the mental confidence of, am I good enough to even charge this? So like, how do you think about that?
Yeah. So a couple of things play into that, that I also want to mention that we didn't share there, is what you've done outside of speaking influences how they perceive you and the value initially. So I go up against Olympians, athletes. Alan, who we talked about, was like a Nike skills trainer, worked with Kevin Durant, Steph Curry. Like, these folks have resumes that I will not touch in terms of competing directly if you just look at our resumes. So I've always, always had the mentality, like, I'm going to out-prepare and outperform you. Like, I just want the audience to leave like, yeah, we had that person who was an Olympic athlete or a pro athlete, but this guy over here who was like working at a gas station selling t-shirts, that like, that guy put on a show.
Yeah.
And so I've always had the mentality, like, let the experience outweigh kind of some of the credentials, backing it up with the statistics and data and things like that. But like, the mental side of it, for me, all that does is, the higher up I go, the more it challenges me to double down on the preparation I already do. And when I tell our students, like, I put hours on hours on hours into a keynote. Not only like, I have my three main keynotes I deliver, but the preparation and the writing it and the scripting it and the rehearsing it. Like, it's not, hey, I wrote it, I outlined it, I go up on stage. It's, hey, I put 20 hours into this. And we laughed yesterday when you were on our podcast about, like, I had the wrong slides. My client got the wrong slides for like a 30-minute keynote, and then I got cut to like 18 minutes. So I'm having to cut the talk and I have the wrong slides. So I just leave the slides off and just go. Mm. And the client's in the back of the room thinking my clicker's broke, because she's like, you're hitting every slide and point. But it was just like, I know it. I got to know it. So you got to have that aspect where you're so prepared in that moment. That I remember when I did the first $15,000 gig, I was like, and it was in Vegas. So it was like my first Vegas gig, which is kind of the, you know, the thing we want as speakers. Like, it's Vegas. You got arenas, like all of this. Vegas for me. Like, I rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed that talk. And when it finished after the first day, I was like talking to the clients, like, what are some feedback? And they were like, oh, you know, we'd love some more group interaction. I said, awesome. So the next day, all I did was pivot and change some of the content to have more interaction at the table. And I got two other gigs out of that, from that company. So that was the signal of, absolutely, you're worth that. Like, you can command that value. And multiple clients since then have paid that fee and been like, dude, that was one of the best we've had. Who can we refer you to? How can we help you? So you getting feedback from the client, and I say from the client and not the audience, because for a lot of us as speakers, you're always going to hear, oh my God, you were the best speaker we've ever heard. Yeah. And da, 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 da. Like, you hear that. What do all the real survey forms say? Like, throw out the hundreds and throw out the zeros and look at the medium. But what is the person who booked you say? And are they willing to say, hey, put the reputation around and do a testimonial referral? Because if they are, then you delivered. But if you didn't, you're probably going to get crickets from them, even if the audience, quote unquote, loved you. And so that's where you start to see it as well. And so now my biggest mental struggle is, I'm really at that 15 range, but I'm probably pushing up based on experience, based on the quality I'm getting and the referrals I'm getting from clients. But the problem with that is, it's dropping off some of the clients. I'm losing opportunities that I would have gotten a year and a half, 2 years ago, because I'm too high of a fee. And so now I have to get over the fact that you have to say bye to one group to really focus on where you want to go. And on my head, I'm creating other things to service those. But like, that's kind of the mental hurdle, because the safe move is, well, let me just go back to the $10,000 range and stay there because I know I can do that. Whereas like, I really want to get to that 25 to 30 range, and I believe I'm 100% capable of it. I just need to be able to say goodbye to this group. And I think that's the thing most people can't get over, because it's the idea that you don't want to say no to a gig of like, it's money. Yeah, but does taking that gig hurt you there? And you and I probably know 1,000 speakers that would say, yeah, I took a $1,000 gig because I couldn't say no to it. And then I had a $10,000 gig come in for the same day I had to say no to.
Yeah, you have to play the long game. And there, again, there's a lot of pieces to that there. But one of the things I want to shift gears for a second here is when we talk about, like, in the speaker success roadmap that we teach at the Speaker Lab, that speak framework, the K is knowing when to scale and kind of what that looks like. And there's a lot of things that go into that from a speaking standpoint. But the other part of that is kind of other parts of the business. You know, people who want to speak oftentimes also want to write a book or do a course or do coaching or do consulting or do any number of things. And so you've got a book out, you got a second book coming out. And so kind of talk us through, like, how do you think about, I want to be more than just kind of a one man band of go stand on stage, but how do you think about, like, when we talk about going to that next level, what does that look like beyond the stage for you?
Yeah. So for me, it's a couple of things. So the book was a big deal. The first book, when it came out, I hadn't anticipated how much having it puts you in a different light. And the caveat I'm going to give to everybody listening is, do not use a ChatGPT book. Do not publish one to just publish one, because if the book sucks, it's not going to help you. It's actually going to do worse for you. Mm-hmm. But if the book is good, then it creates a whole new opportunity. So the first book came out 2020, second book came out January of this year. And we're creating a course component with it, because as I grow and scale, I've realized I can't help some of the audiences that I grew up on, essentially, right? The group helping. I also can't be everywhere at once. And so how do I create products, or eventually kind of getting into our team to be able to facilitate and share this information that we know creates impact and gets results in a way that doesn't require me being on the stage all the time? And John Gordon does an incredible job with this, with his speakers and his Power of Positive Summit. Like, he's got some ways to scale him. So for me, I'm always thinking, as I level up and work with new clients, A, what am I creating for that next level? So the book that came out this year was very intentionally designed for corporate audiences and managers. And it was designed to open more doors speaking and create new levels of opportunity for me versus my first book, Compete Every Day. But on the same token, I am not able to help, say, colleges and high schools the way I probably was taking more opportunities early in my career. So I'm in the process of writing my third book specifically for them, because every keynote I do, I always have parents come up afterwards and say, do you have anything where I can teach some of this stuff to my kids? Or my kids in high school, do they read this? And so that for me, as you scale up, if I wasn't growing in my career, I'd be like, oh, I'll go speak to the high school, I'll do this. But technically, I can't. That doesn't make sense long term and financially with the business. But what does make sense is, how do I write a book and create something I can give them that, oh, by the way, also markets to their parents that they should bring me into the company to talk to the adults about this? So I'm always thinking of what's going to allow me get to the next level, like the course content. The whole reason we created a course is because I knew as I grew in my career, I wouldn't be able to take some of the gigs I take now. I also saw that a lot of people after the event may want to have and work with you, but don't have the budget. So how do I have access to some of the learnings so that they can take their team through or their company through in for those opportunities? And so that's kind of how we've created that. I do a little bit of consulting. I do a little bit of coaching. And part of that was clients after the fact asking, hey, do you do this? And early on in the career, I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. And then doing it and realize, you know what? I don't really enjoy that as much. Let me put my energies elsewhere. And so that wasn't something where you want to be the speaker that comes out and says, I have 10 courses and 10 books and I do all these things and I speak to all these. It's like, I was all in on speaking. I found out I was missing opportunities because I didn't have a book. I wrote a really good book that's done well. As I've grown, I said, what's going to take me to the next level? Well, I need to have a book for that audience at the next level. And I need to also have courses and components that I can supplement going to speak to all of those people for. And then what's going to get me to the next level? It's probably going to be this. And so that's typically how I strategically look at, like, does it help you get in front of that next level audience? And if it doesn't, probably isn't a good investment of time. It's why, as we've laughed offline, like, I bullied Brittany Richmond on our team to, like, get her book done. I was like, you have to get your book done because you can't be everywhere all at once. And if you want to get to this next level, like, this is a key component for you. And so that's how we have to think about that as well. Because you look at the people at the top, the John Acuffs, the John Gordons, the Mel Robbins, they have multiple books. They have strong online followings. They produce science, research-backed content. It's not just, hey, these are my cool stories and ideas. It's, hey, here's actually what we found. Here's evidence for what we say. And then they're just super consistent. You're never going to see those people mail it in. And so that is a huge one too.
And one of the things with like on the consistency piece is that is one of the things that takes years literally to build that reputation, you know? So I think just having that long-term perspective there that, yeah, you can do this. It's just going to take a minute and you got to be willing to put the work in and have that long-term perspective. So Jake, before we wrap up here,
yep.
People who are again at that level of maybe where you were a couple of years ago and going like, hey, I'm trying to figure out, we've covered a lot of ground here. Any like one final piece of advice of I want to go to the next level. What do I need to do next?
Yeah, don't just sell a talk. Like that's the big, and that's what we teach, right? Don't, hey, I'm a speaker or I have a really cool keynote. One, you got to sell the outcome. But two, you kind of have to create an experience. Like a lot of what I'm seeing now is what is the experience you're getting? There's some groups that are like, hey, we just need a speaker for this breakfast or this lunch. But in corporate and association especially, like they want to know I'm not going to get just a 1 hour talk and then tomorrow everything goes back to the way it was. What is the real solution? And when you can lead with that, provide value, and then that client either A, wants to rebook you or is happy and excited to refer you and follows through on that referral, then you start thinking, okay, is there a next, like, do I want to ask for $6,500 in my next gig and see what they say? Do I want to go to $7,000? Like, playing with that a little bit, but you got to know your industry. To your point, education is like very different ballgame than corporate. Associations are a lot of times very different ballgames than corporate, but association is a room full of meeting planners. So like know your industry really well, know the solution and the outcome you're selling, not the quote unquote talk. And then our guy, Eric, is probably the best person I've ever met at this. You just got to be consistently working the process and pipeline for it over and over and over again. And the more in demand you are, the more opportunity or the more consistent you are with your pipeline, the more opportunities you're going to create, the more opportunities you go and get on stage, the more in demand you're going to be. If you're good, then you start raising those fees. And that kind of puts you into that next tier of, I see this person everywhere. Like every time I pull on social media, you're at a different event, you're speaking here, you must be in really high demand, which is a signal, oh, there's a little bit of celebrity status, credibility status. Maybe I'm going to ask for a little bit higher next time.
Yeah, very well said and summarized there. All right, Jake, if people want to find out more about you and what you're up to, where can we go?
Easiest place is going to be competeeveryday.com. And then if you're on social, I hang out on Instagram and LinkedIn pretty much exclusively. And that's Jake Thompson Speaks. Drop me a note if there's anything on here you had a question about, or if you're one of those kind of speakers, you're trying to figure it out and you're like, I just want to know like one to two things to do. If you DM me, I'll give them to you. And if you follow through, I'll be happy to answer questions. But if you don't, just wave goodbye.
Hey, and also, like I said at the beginning, like Jake is one of our facilitators. I mean, he's in the trenches with our students day in and day out, teaching them exactly what he's seeing. He's on the front lines doing this as you've seen today. And so if you want to learn directly from Jake, definitely go over to thespeakerlab.com, schedule a call with our team, and learn what that would look like to work with us and with Jake. So Jake, thanks for the time, man. We appreciate it.
Always enjoy it, my man.
Hey, friend, are you ready to get serious about taking your speaking business to the next level? Maybe you are someone who is looking for ways to book more paid gigs, or maybe you're trying to figure out all the different things that go into building a successful speaking business. Or perhaps you are an experienced speaker who wants to scale your speaking business to multiple six figures. And so if that's you, I would encourage you to visit thespeakerlab.com/apply. Again, that is thespeakerlab.com/apply. I want you to book a free, no obligation call with our team. And if you're not quite ready to take that leap, I don't want you to hesitate in checking out all the free resources that we have available to you on our website, including this podcast. So head over to thespeakerlab.com. Again, thespeakerlab.com. Find hundreds of blog posts, how-to guides, podcast episodes, email scripts, proposal templates, and so much more. Finally, I got a big favor. I would love for you to leave us a rating or review for this podcast. We read every single one, and it also helps other speakers find valuable free resources that they can use to build their own speaking careers. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.